Sports. Wine. Life. This is the Macko and Cos podcast.
Hey everyone, and welcome to the Macko and Cos podcast. The weather is nice. The NBA playoffs has been awesome. Bob, you just came from some sort of fancy sauna thing, and the Chinese are screwing with my household. How you doing, Bob?
Well, we'll get to my thing in a second. How are the Chinese screwing with your household? Is this above and beyond international trade relations?
This is exactly international trade. Actually, no, it's nothing. Not that at all. Amy got some decorations, some birthday decorations for her aunt's upcoming birthday, and it's supposed to say awesome, but instead of the A, it's an E, and I think they got it off Temu. You know, one of those places where you get lots of cheap stuff for cheap prices. You kind of get what you pay for. So, yeah, we are dealing with that.
So, awesome actually has just E-W-S-O-M-E. So, it's Usom.
Usom, yeah.
Usom. Yeah. Okay, well, I suggest then we roll with it. And every time we want to use the word awesome today, we use Usom instead. We're going to make it happen. Like in Mean Girls with Fetch. We're going to make Usom happen.
You know what Usom sounds like? It sounds like a middle reliever in the 40s, you know, before the game was integrated. Oh, coming to the mound now, it's Usom Brown. Usom is a real flamethrower, I tell you. He throws at 78 miles an hour. Good luck, boys, trying to get a hit off of him.
And you get the little mallet on the piece of wood for the sound effects.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a can of corn, oh. And it drops into Dizzy Dean's, I don't know. I'm not.
You lost that. Oh, I did.
Yeah, I did a sound bath this morning. I woke up at 5:30. Sound bath was at 7. It's a place. It's a kind of a spa sauna. It's like they do this in Europe all the time. It's Nordic, right? So you have the super hot sauna and then the cold plunges. And this morning it was also a sound bath.
What the fuck is a sound bath?
It's just they play like they hit chimes and stuff.
So you were.
It sounds nice.
So you're in a bath with music.
Yeah, I had a sauna with music.
Okay.
So from one to the other, one to the other, and I realized like this is kind of woo woo, right? But there's a part of me that's really hippie. You know, I kind of get drawn to this woo woo stuff. And then I thought, but at the same time, I'm very angry and judgmental. So what? You'll appreciate this. And I thought, how can you be a hippie and angry and judgmental at the same time? And it came to me, Matt. Christian. That's what a Christian is.
Oh.
You believe in woo-woo and you're mad at everybody all the time.
Classic liberal blaming organized religion for life's ills instead of taking a long look in a mirror and realizing I was doing a bougie thing today, so I'm going to try to put it on. This is a Euro thing. This is, you know, some sort of keeping in touch with myself. You went to a spa, Bob.
This is my one indulgence. Matt, I don't do drugs.
Nope.
I don't drink. I don't philander. I don't gamble. I don't smoke. I don't buy clothing. I don't go out at night. And I use Uber for Eats very, very infrequently. There are two things that I do. Potato chips and spas. And if you take those away from me, I might as well be dead.
Listen, I love that you do it. Far be it from me to shit on someone's indulgences. I don't know if you know this about me, Bob. I like to dabble in a little me time every now and then. So,
Matt, you have a bowl of seafood sauce next to your bed, just for when you're eating shrimp in bed.
Oh, it's so good, bed shrimp. Not as good as bath shrimp, because there's something about when you're in the land of the food you're eating. You know, so you're eating shrimp while you're in the water. I got to ask.
Yeah.
What was the music that was being played? I'm assuming not Pantera.
No. It was kind of more like Obituary meets Metallica.
Mm.
No, it's just like chimes and then there's bowls and you bing the bowls. It's very soothing. It's very pleasant.
You bing the bowls?
Yeah, you get like a little bing and then there's another one from a different frequency and the bing and then there's a little harmony and it's nice. It's got Enya vibes to it for sure.
Listen, I love it. As someone who loves being in baths and loves a good spa, though I don't go to spas that much, but I do love the morning bath, which, again, nothing screams you don't have children or responsibility quite like I'm going to have a bath at 8 in the morning.
There's only two reasons to get into the bath in the morning. It's either that you don't have kids and, like you like to indulge yourself, or things are really bad. things can be really, and you just go, you know what? I'm going to need a bath to deal with this.
That's so true. Either life is really carefree and awesome, or it's in the total shits.
Yeah.
It's never a 6.5 out of 10.
No.
No 6.5 out of 10 person is in a bath.
Yeah, it's like showering outside. It's either an indication you have a lot of money or none.
Yep. It's one or the other.
I want to be positive today. I want to have a happy day. It's so beautiful out. I thought, you know what? When I come today, I want to do only topics looking at the bright side of things.
You know what's funny about that, Bob?
Hmm.
My opening thought today is actually everything worked out last night.
Mm-hmm.
Everything that I wanted in hockey, in basketball, and in baseball, beyond the fact that the Jays game was rain delayed by 2 hours, and I didn't even know it happened until the morning. But it was a perfect day. That was a perfect day of sports. Where would you like to start?
And, well, I was going to ask you, actually, in the spirit of positivity, we can start off with hockey. We can start off with baseball. We can start off with basketball. Or we can start off talking about Stephen Colbert's last show, which is tonight.
We're doing positive. So we'll start with sports because the Colbert's last show.
Well, I think it's positive. It's not positive that it's ending. But,
yeah.
But I have a lot of good things to say about him. We can come back to it, though.
Let's
start with basketball.
We could go biggest to smallest, because biggest was basketball, second biggest was hockey, and the smallest, because there's 162 of them, was the Jays win over the Yankees. But we'll start with basketball. So it was another great game. It wasn't the double overtime Spurs win over the Thunder, but that game went down to the wire until the last minute. And Wembanyama was still incredible, an incredible theater. And SGA looked like that's what an MVP looked like. And if the Spurs had won last night, then suddenly it felt like, oh no, this great series is over. We'll start with Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Okay.
We'll start with Shea.
So to your point, and I think what you said was 100% true, was he did what MVPs do. He dropped 30, and he looked like he was not going to have... He didn't have a bad game in the first game, but he wasn't the dominant player on the court. And that had to reverse itself. He didn't have to be the best player, because when you're playing against Wemby, you know, it could go back and forth. But you have to be the best player on your team. And he was. And his game is so multivaried. There's so many things he does. You know, he hits from outside, he gets inside, he's got that little change of pace, he gets other people going, plays ruthless defense. He's just a joy to watch. Like, if you love basketball, he's kind of like what's good about basketball rolled into one player.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so smart.
He had more points than anyone else.
Mm-hmm.
He had more assists than anyone else.
Right.
No one played more than his 38 minutes. And he had one turnover, which was another big part in it. And he shot 50% in a game where he knew, okay, it's not do or die, but it's kind of do or die. And the second best scorer on the team, Jalen Williams, was out early.
Mm-hmm.
So, no De'Aaron Fox, and then Dylan Harper get hurt. We can talk about what hurt the Spurs. But on that end, there was a lot riding on Shea Gilgeous-Alexander's shoulders.
It's true. And I also thought the team around him really responded, because even in that first 6 minutes, they were just taking it right to the Spurs. They showed no intimidation. Not that they should. They're the defending champs. They're at home. They have the best record in basketball. But they did lose 4 or 5 games to the Spurs. And they did lose a bit of a heartbreaker in that. I mean, if they came out and looked a little out of it, it wouldn't be great, but you could kind of understand it. But it was quite the opposite. They came out and just said, you know where we are, right? And you know whose house this is. And they just... Hartenstein, there was all kinds of conversation, could you even start him in game two? And he was integral, both in terms of his rebounding, particularly offensive side, but just giving Wemby a hard time.
Very hard time. There's going to be a lot of debate about did the officials let too much go? Because Hartenstein, he was a 80s WWF heel.
He was Bill Laimbeer.
Oh, yeah.
He Bill Laimbeered it last night.
Oh, he was Bill Laimbeer and Bobby the Brain Heenan.
And Sergeant Slaughter.
And Iron Mike Sharp. Like, just, he used all these Weasley little tricks. And some of them weren't little. Like, at one point, he's like, are you trying to grab the...
Yeah, a punch in the head, I don't think, is a Weasley little trick.
Are you trying to take the arm off, like, that Victor Wembanyama is a G.I. Joe action figure? Like, he did everything.
So, part of playoff basketball is knowing that the refs can't call everything. They just can't. or else there would be a call on every game. It's kind of like in football, like in the trenches. If you wanted to, you could probably find a penalty on every single play.
Absolutely.
And that's not fun to watch.
Nope.
The NBA has gravitated too far towards protecting guards and not far enough towards protecting big men. And it's never protected big men. Like, you used to just kick Shaq in the balls.
Yeah.
And people would turn a blind eye because he's 7'4 and 300 pounds. And Wemby has the same problem. He's 7'5. Like, how are you not going to mug him?
And Wembanyama was incredible again. Like, there's no one. Like, there was a couple times where he drove to the basket and he missed his own shot. And then he just is like, oh, let me just get that shot I missed. Let me just dunk it. Like, he's the only one that can block a Chet Holmgren three-pointer. You can't block a seven-footer three-point shot unless you're Wembanyama. There was one play where he hit a three effortlessly. And I know he didn't shoot as well from three, but he hit a three effortlessly. Then 18 seconds later, he blocked a Caruso layup where they drew up a great play. Caruso was cutting back door, great pass. That's a layup. And within 20 seconds, like, you are not allowed to hit a three and then block that shot. Like, Wemby was still magnificent.
If you check the tape from our show, about a year and a half ago, I came up with the analogy that he's like AI. Wemby is our artificial intelligence in the sense that he's this new thing that we kind of recognize and yet also acknowledge this is different than anything we've seen before. And it goes way further than everything we've done before this. It occurred to me, and this is an over, like, this is too much. This is hyperbole. It's almost like at his best, give him two or three more years, he will be Bill Russell and Wilt Chamberlain, where he'll be impossible to defeat defensively and offensively.
It's even scarier than that, Bob. You haven't given it enough hyperbole. How did they...
I don't know if that's a thing.
You missed one name. Steph Curry. How did they get to a second overtime in game one? He hit a three from that distance, from Steph Curry distance. Then how did they pull away in the second overtime? He got two dunks. So he's like, well, I'm going to beat you like Steph. Now I'm going to beat you like Shaq. And I'm going to defend like Bill Russell. And I know he's not going to be able to do that for 82 games. The human body can't do it. But holy shit, the Wembanyama experience, it's the cat with the laser pointer, and you're just watching it on the screen the whole time, and you can't take your eyes off of it.
Okay, so I did a little exercise with myself. I don't know if you've ever heard of this poem. You remember I was doing Bob's Poems?
Yes, I love Bob's Poems.
Right, so this is
short-lived series, but a great one.
Okay, well, it's coming back. This is a bit of an extrapolation on that, though. There's a poem by Wallace Stevens, famous one, you might have heard of it, called 13 Ways of Looking at a Blackbird. And basically, it's like 13 little snapshots that describe a blackbird.
I got to stop you, Bob. This is embarrassing. That's what they did on First Up this morning. Carlo and AK, they did this for like 25 minutes with Dreger. But sorry, continue.
Could they count to 13?
You know, they got to 11.
Without help?
And they petered out.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. I love you guys.
Just different ways of looking at Wemby. The first way, the way we look at a tree, straight up, 45 degrees angle, because he's very tall. Two, the way we look at Kareem, but maybe better. And this goes to your point, and I'm talking 70s Kareem here, when he was Lou Alcindor and then became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, and he came into the league, and there had been nothing really quite like him. He was sort of a legend before he even started, and then he went to UCLA and became a champion. And there was just this feeling like Kareem was somehow different. And it wasn't just that he was superior in terms of basketball. He was different. Just like Wemby kind of is. Like, when you hear stuff like in China that he dribbled a ball up a mountain.
That story came out the other day. He dribbled a ball up a mountain. And the terrain, you're not doing this on concrete. That was a crazy story.
It's a crazy. So apparently last season he went to train with Shaolin monks in China as a way to learn body control and mind control. And you think, oh, that's amazing. But what did Kareem do? Kareem studied martial arts. He was in a Bruce Lee movie. It even goes that far. So we look at him as Kareem. This one I really want to get to here. I think we look at him the way we look at Magic Johnson. But here's what I mean by that. It's Magic and Bird. And now you've got SGA and Wemby. We don't get matchups of great teams and players anymore. Like, you can have great players, but generally speaking, we don't have super teams the way they used to that face each other because it's very hard to achieve excellence in a salary cap era. the Lakers and the Celtics was kind of like Ollie and Frazier. You knew that the two best were going to face each other and that both of them were kind of historically great. We're so treated now because we're watching something very important here. Wemby has a nemesis. SGA has a nemesis. This almost never happens in modern sports anymore. It kind of happens in single sports, you know, like Federer versus Nadal or whatever. But these two guys are the best at what they do. They're the two best players in the world, and they've got the two best teams behind them. This is the Jets and the Sharks. We're going to watch this for the next 5 years, and it's going to go back and forth, and it's going to define the next era of basketball the way the Lakers and the Celtics did.
Yeah, and if you're the Lakers, you're like, oh, shit, what do we do now? Like, if you're another team in the West, but you're right. It's the two best players on the two best teams doing battle.
When you think about, like, Magic Johnson or Kareem, there was also James Worthy. There was also A.C. Green. There was also Byron Scott. Like, they were really great teams. And then the Celtics, you know, I don't need to roll call all of them. There's, like, three or four Hall of Famers.
Yeah, Johnson, McHale, Parrish, Bird.
Yeah, and even, like, DJ was a great player in his own
yeah,
way.
Yeah, of course.
Right? I feel like we're looking at that now. So what you've got is these two apex teams with two apex players atop of them. This is exactly what team sports is all about. It kind of made me think of you, and it made me think of like the late 80s, early 90s in the NFC in football. And if you were like a Niners fan, you knew the Cowboys were out there. And if you were the Cowboys, you knew the Niners were out there. And it was going to go head to head. And one of you had to beat them to get to where you were going.
Yeah, it was Steve Young versus Troy Aikman, Joe Montana versus some great Dallas teams. We don't need to talk about Danny White. Danny White, though, good career. Anyway, it's just so exciting. Like, that's also part of it, is that you're watching these games, and they're close, but it's all the talent on the court, and everyone is doing their thing. Like, I'm going to tell you right now, I don't even kill Stephen Castle. Oh, I know he had 9 turnovers. He also had 25, 5, and 5. He also guards really well.
He's also 22.
Or 21. He's the youngest player in a conference finals to put up the numbers he did last night. That game was so good. I don't care about whatever failures occurred. Different than in New York, Cleveland. Game one, you can celebrate the Knicks, or you can just laugh at Kenny Atkinson and Harden and Donovan Mitchell, and that they shit the bed after that by 22 in the fourth. But in Spurs OKC, even Shea not scoring with a great efficiency in game one, I don't view anything as failure. I just view all the excellence going on.
I texted you last night and I said something along the lines of, it feels like 1996. Mm-hmm. And what I meant by that was, those were pretty low scoring games, even though there was enormous talent on the floor when you got to the finals. Because they really defended hard and they really beat the shit out of each other. And it felt like they couldn't go harder at each other than they were. And that's what we saw. Like, it wasn't just that there was basketball excellence. It was ferocious. Tirico and them were laughing.
By the way, great point. That broadcast was mostly Jamal Crawford, Reggie Miller giggling with some Mike Tirico as well. That's what most of the analysis
they knew
was.
Because they knew what they were seeing.
Yeah.
There was no point in making a comment. You could see with your own eyes. And Bill Simmons had a good line about it. He said, it's like you watch most basketball, it's like listening to a pod on one speed. And that was a game that was like on 1.5.
Yeah.
It just felt faster, more active. I wanted to throw something out at you. I started thinking about the idea of mystery and awe. You know, excellence in sports is what we say we want, and we do because, you know, it produces winning. And excellence is really a recognizable skill performed efficiently and consistently. That's excellence. And there's a lot of players who achieve that. Then there's the very rare group, very rare, where what they achieve is a sense of awe, a sense of mystery about them. It's not just that they're incredibly good at what they do. They make you ask, how are they doing what they're doing? You know, and Wemby is that guy. Like, SGA to me is excellent.
But we've seen SGA. We've seen Kobe.
Right.
We've seen players do what he does.
You know, you couldn't ask him to be better, but you recognize all the skills. It's cool to see them all in one package. But he looks like an excellent basketball player, which is what he is. But Wemby's different because you ask yourself, how can this guy do what he's doing? That's the Reggie Miller laughing about how he, you know, Wemby throws up a shot outside the paint and then gets his own rebound from like 9 feet away.
Amy was busy. She had a lot of work to do. She's been working on a film set all day. She's worked almost 18 of the last 20 days straight, all long hours. She's home, and she still has to do some social media stuff she was doing on the side. And I still made her, can you please just pause for a second? Because right. Amy loves to play basketball. I'm like, watch this that Wembanyama did. I'm like, I don't know how he did that.
Yeah, nobody does. I started thinking, like, who are some athletes for you that transcend excellence and actually become part of awe? I'll get us started just while you're thinking about it.
Oh, I don't have to think about it, Bob. I've already put together an opening thought for one of my days when I don't have an idea.
Oh, my God. You and I are so in sync.
Who can you not turn away from?
Yeah.
I've already started to put together a list. You do yours. I'll mention mine.
Okay. Why don't you start? Because I've been chatting a lot.
Okay. I'm going to do 2018 to 2022 Patrick Mahomes. Tyreek Hill was there a ton. He wins two MVPs. He comes in third another year. He wins two Super Bowls, 11-3 in the playoffs. He averaged over 4,700 yards. And he just, you couldn't take your eyes off of him and that offense. The other two I'll mention, first 6 years of Randy Moss. I don't really think I need to add that much more to it. And the, you know what the funny thing is? He never once led the NFL in receiving yards for a season. There was always someone else that would have like...
Is that true?
Yes. I discovered this yesterday.
That shocks me.
Never once in his first 6 years did he ever lead it. But, I mean, he led in touchdowns, but not in receiving yards. But you could never take your eyes off of him. You're like, how did he do it? And then the third one, because I wanted to balance out, Aaron Donald in 2018 got 20 and a half sacks from defensive tackle position. We see that at end. We see that at linebacker. We don't see a defensive tackle putting up over 20 sacks. So there are three on my football side.
I've got a Randy, but it's actually Randy Johnson.
Yes, great one.
Giant, left-handed, mean as F, and just dominated players. Like, you had to watch him. You couldn't turn away because everything felt like it wouldn't just be a strikeout. It would be a humiliation of the batter. You could see they were scared. Do you remember Larry Walker putting on his helmet backwards, ready to dive out of the box, famously? I think maybe the most amazing, awe-inspiring athlete I ever watched was peak Dominic Hasek, because he would make saves that made no sense. He was the best player in the league by far in an era of great players.
1998, Dominic Hasek. This was brought up because of Victor Wembanyama on my show. We are in
computers. Oh, have you done this?
Okay. Oh, yeah. 1998, Vezina, Hart,
mm-hmm.
gold medal for Czechia or Czech Republic, beating Canada in one of the earlier rounds. Only time they've ever won gold in Olympic hockey. In 1 year, Hasek, Vezina, Hart, gold medal.
That's not a bad year.
Not a bad year.
I also feel like, I don't know if he was necessarily the last, but he was certainly one of the last goalies of a certain ilk, which is the guy who looks like he's hanging on by a thread in the net, and yet he pulls through. He would just do these crazy, spectacular, athletic things. It was like his limbs had no ligaments in them. He's just flopping all over.
Mr. Fantastic.
Yeah, exactly, which was thrilling to watch. It was just thrilling and shocking and surprising to watch. Goaltending is the kind of position that lends itself to awe because it's so, the stakes are so high.
The stakes are so high, and hockey doesn't lend itself because of the nature of the sport. You're only going to the ice for so many minutes. So you could do Connor McDavid.
Mm-hmm. But I would argue Connor McDavid's excellent, except for his east-west speed.
Yeah. So,
which is kind of amazing sometimes, but it doesn't happen that often.
Here's the hockey guy I brought up with, and it'll seem hot takey, but the guy that you just couldn't keep your eyes off of, and he barely plays. You might not even remember him. 2 years ago, Matt Rempe, like the 6'7" New York Ranger,
okay, yeah.
who just, and at a time where there's not fighting going on anymore, he gets in and he's just, every game he is fighting someone. And these are violent, violent fights. And one of his first games, he's fighting Matt Martin. And it got to the point where for this 1 year, I remember Overdrive would always be commenting, is Rempe in the lineup tonight? When it's like, Rempe's on the ice. And you know, there's the tough guy for the Maple Leafs. Like, it's... And I know he's not talented, but you couldn't keep your eyes off of him if he was on the ice.
That's a good, can't keep your eyes off him because of the entertainment slash, you know, shock factor.
Yeah, not talent. I understand.
You know, there's a couple hockey guys we could throw in there. I think Bobby Orr, just the way he revolutionized the game with his skating. Pavel Bure was so fast and explosive. Mm-hmm. There were times where you were just like in awe of what he could do. The one who really comes to mind for me is Erik Lindros, though. Particularly Lindros as a kid, because I think he was 18 when he made it to the Canada Cup team, and he separated Ulf Samuelsson's shoulder, and he was so big and so strong that until he got rung up by Scott Stevens and it kind of changed the trajectory of his career, he just seemed like this freakish physical specimen that was also like hockey IQ brilliant. And, you know, he still was an incredible player. He still had a great career, but he was so dominant.
Before concussion, he could get a hat trick and he could get into a couple fights.
And guys were scared of him.
Yeah.
Guys were scared of him. Like, yep. They were like, there was a Scott Stevens factor. If Scott Stevens could also deliver 100 points.
Yeah.
As good as Stevens was. I think that as fans, we cheer for excellence because we know that's the ticket to winning. But also as fans, I think we just have learned to appreciate these, you know, these Haley Comet, you know, trajectory of careers where you just go, I'm not going to see this again. This is a one, like, think about this. Like, there's millions of kids out there every single year who push themselves so hard to become basketball players. And of the millions upon millions upon millions, every once in a while, there's one who can do something different. And yeah, we are watching that.
We're watching it with Wemby, just like we watch it with Steph. In like the 15, 16, 17, those first couple of years when he took three-point shooting to a completely different area. Shaq in 2000, you know, when he was at his peak and fully healthy.
And I'm going to let you go off on this because I know this is so important to you. But not only is he a unique talent, but he seems to be a unique competitive person. And we talked about the elbow in the Minnesota round, mm-hmm, and how you and I said, you know, when who did he hit again? Was it McDaniels?
Naz Reid.
And we said, this is a good sign. It shows that he's out there to kill the opponents. And everybody talked about him sitting in game one watching the SGA MVP presentation. And he was like Clubber Lang watching Rocky and Rocky III, just waiting to get in there with them. Not only is he a physical alien freak, he's got the mindset of a Jordan.
Yep.
Meets Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. Like, who is this guy?
It happens so rarely, and especially, and I'm not even doing all the basketball players are soft. The basketball players are human, so that you make a whole lot more money. When you're making that much more money, it's hard to be a prick all the time. When all the players are hanging out with each other more, AAU, all that stuff, it's hard to hate when you're friends with someone. It's just that's just life. That's psychology. But Wemby wasn't in the AAU stuff. Wemby made the All-Star game at least matter a little bit more because he said, I'm going to give a shit. And then everyone else is like, oh, shit, if he's giving a shit, I guess we have to give a shit. Because you'll feel shame if you're not trying as hard as the guy that has more talent than you. And then Wembanyama went full Hakeem Olajuwon 1995 against David Robinson when David Robinson wins the MVP. And then Olajuwon puts nearly 50 on him. And it's one of the few times you felt bad for a player who won the MVP who was chiseled. Like, David Robinson was a perfect specimen. By the end of the game, you were full Simpsons. Stop it, stop it. He's already dead. Like, you know, the Hamburglar. Like, that's...
It's like Drudrick Tatum fighting Homer.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what that is. And Wembanyama has fuck you. Like, yeah. I hate you, and I want to win so bad. It's just a bit of everything. I worry that, are we going to get bored of it? Are we going to stop finding ways to talk about
it? Did you ever get bored of Jordan?
No.
Right. We won't get bored of this because it'll always have new obstacles to face. And just like Jordan invented problems, even when there aren't obstacles to face, Wemby will find them and conquer them.
Which is why it's important the Spurs don't win it this year. Because the heroes, and listen, they're going further and doing more since the 1977 Portland Trailblazers in terms of a team this young in a conference finals. Hasn't happened since then. But the hero's arc, the hero's journey needs to have some obstacles.
This is a great point. It's like LeBron getting to the final for the first time, but then losing. And you just know that he's got the taste of blood and he's going to want it more. You know, I heard this great anecdote and I can't remember who reported it, but Gobert and Wemby are friends. They're both, you know, through the French team and everything, and they were playing Minnesota. Wemby goes over to Gobert's house, and he sees he's got some kind of filtration system on his sink, and he starts asking him about it because he wants to know, what's the healthiest water I can drink? His mind is obviously always attuned to winning. And someone said to Gobert, who was recounting this story, did Anthony Edwards ever ask you? And Gobert just said, I wait for Anthony Edwards to ask me about the water.
And that's the difference. And Edwards is incredible.
He's incredible. He's a top five player in the league. Yeah. Well, top seven.
Yeah. But there's something just different. And what you hope for is that this inspires other NBA stars. They're not going to be like Wemby, because you're not blessed with that size and that coordination and just everything he can do. But that mindset, there's a lot more players that can get a little bit more of that.
You wanted to drive them the way Jordan drove Ewing, the way Jordan drove Barkley, the way he drove Reggie Miller.
I'll give a better, I won't say a better one. The way Tiger Woods drove everyone else in the PGA.
Yeah.
When Tiger shows up and he's in shape and he works out all the time. And I mean, other guys were in shape. It's not like everyone was a fat golfer in 1995. But Tiger made everyone realize, oh shit, I guess fewer carbs and more time spent in the gym.
Every time you cross a threshold, there is a new target to shoot for, and Wemby is a new threshold. You know, I was watching Spurs and OKC the last two nights, and I also, as a Raptors fan, was thinking, who from the Raptors could hang in this series? They're playing so hard, and you get a bit of this with the Leafs when you're watching, the Avs and the, Golden Knights, for example. Mm-hmm. It's like, who could actually hang when things really get rough? And I came up with a list. Do you want to hear it?
Is it more than two names?
It is two names.
Yeah, CMB and it's Scotty Barnes.
Those are the two names. I also put one, like I drew a line, and then underneath, Jacoby Walter could become that guy.
Yeah, I agree.
He could become that guy. He seems to have a bit of dog in him, but I think the turnovers in this would kill him. The turnovers would kill RJ, Brandon Ingram. I don't even want to think about it. Emmanuel Quickley, there are things I like about his game in this series, particularly as a guard who can score. But just the pace, I don't know. And the physicality of it. I don't know. Maybe Quickley. He's also kind of up there with Jacoby, just as who might be able to hang. But this is an indication of how far the Raptors have to go to really be a championship team. They have two players that could hang in this series.
And most fan bases might only have one.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing. That's not
great point.
You know,
how many Knicks can?
Well, the Knicks, they actually...
They match up pretty well.
They do, and they blew out the Spurs with Wembanyama playing.
You know what it is? It's because Karl Anthony Towns, as a big, mm-hmm. can force him to come away from the back, from the basket.
And they got, and OG Anunoby actually defends him really well. They've got a bunch of bigs. The Knicks, I'm not getting ahead of myself, because the Knicks, if they do win, they'll be a big underdog, whoever comes out of the West. But there is a path.
There is a path. By the way, is Alex Caruso basketball Brad Marchand?
Oh, absolutely. He 100%. God, he's good. So.
And irritating.
Yeah.
He's so irritating.
He's such an asshole. And like Lou Dort is like, I'm supposed to be the irritating one. Like the two of them. God, they're assholes.
You know, I love them, but they really are a team of pricks. And Chet's a prick.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Chet's really a prick.
Except when he's going up against Wembanyama, then he kind of shrinks. Like, he's got to have a little more Hartenstein. Hartenstein's dirty. And
Bill Laimbeer.
Yeah, totally Bill Laimbeer. Oh,
okay. Look, hockey,
so excited.
Hockey, baseball, and Colbert. That's what we've got.
I will say this about hockey. I love that Colorado lost because Colorado started out like 37-5. I forget what the record is, but their first 40-plus games, they were setting all these records. They were mm-hmm. ahead of everyone. They never trailed in their division. They swept the Kings. They were up 2-0 against the Wild. They lost game three, but then they win game four and five. This is the first time all year this team has experienced doubt, fear. Ah, shit. It was a coronation all season long for Colorado, deservedly. They've been incredible. And this is the first time where it's like, oh, now what? And the only bummer is I want Cale Makar to come back. If Vegas is going to win it, and Colorado's still a slight favorite to win this series, but I want Cale Makar there. I don't want Colorado to go down with Devin Taves having to play 30 minutes.
I think Vegas to talk about the Colorado Avalanche feeling fear, it's because Vegas is such a good organization, and that starts, I think, with the ownership. As a Leafs fan, it's hard not to be jealous of Vegas ownership.
Totally.
Bill Foley is utterly and totally committed to winning on the ice. On the ice, not in the boardroom, not with sponsors. He's totally and utterly committed to winning on the ice. I'm not going to turn this on our positive show into a rant against Maple Leafs management, but I do think it's a, like, watching Marner, and it's hard not to be, you know, he's got a bit of the awe factor. He's had a couple moments where it's like, man, there's maybe four or five people in the world who could do what he just did.
His pass on the power play goal, Dorf on golf. Yeah, good reference. Kids are going to love that one. Hey, do you remember VHS? So, but yeah, his going through two defenders and the pass to set up the goal, the power play goal that made it 2-0. That was a great moment.
That's just, there's something about, how do you bring in John Tortorella with, what was it, 8 games left?
If that. Yeah.
If that, you know, yeah. And then is that a good move or a bad move? I don't know.
Who knows?
Whatever it is, it's working. Could Bruce Cassidy have done it? Maybe, I don't know. We'll never know. You can't prove a negative. But the bottom line is they're in the Final Four, and they're up one game against Colorado. So they're in a pretty good spot. And they just seem so utterly unafraid to do big things.
And I was happy because I wanted to see the best team in hockey get nervous. And now they are. But as I said, proviso, we need Cale Makar there. Real quick, is there any... I find the whole Mitch Marner conversation boring. He was always great. He wasn't great in big games with Toronto. He goes to an organization with a lot of mature players who have won, who have been there and done it. And he's not the guy that has to be counted on. And he's been great.
And it's freed him up.
And the only thing is when people go, see that narrative that he was bad in the playoffs, that was wrong. No, it was right. We were all there. Here are the numbers. Take the emotion out of it. Both things can be true. He disappeared like all of them in big games, and he's been incredible in these games.
I do want to come back to the Leafs in a second, but I want to give a shout out to Overdrive right now, because we're talking about owners and, you know, people who are in charge, and they interviewed Jeff Gorton yesterday from the Habs, who's president of the Habs, and man, was it a good interview. And what was really interesting is they were asking about Marty St. Louis, who apparently is not going to be at the game tonight. And as we're recording this, we don't exactly know why. It seems to be some family issues.
So, oh, okay. I didn't see that.
Yeah, I just saw it as I was coming up here. Apparently he wasn't at practice and something's come up. So whatever it is, we don't know the answer to that as we're recording this. But they asked him, did you know Marty St. Louis was going to be this good as a coach? And he was like, no. But when we hired him, you know, speaking of St. Louis, Gorton was like, we knew he had the pedigree and we knew he could be good. And the team was really down in the dumps and low. And we just brought him in for cheap at the end of a shady season. And he just kept getting better and better, improving more and more. So he goes, we'd be lying if we knew this is what was going to happen. But we thought it could. And I thought to myself, God, what a brave decision to just keep going with this guy who had no coaching experience to guide your rebuild for as long as he was good. And you think about it and you go, that is adjusting on the fly to what you have in front of you. Take this to Brad for a living, who was also being interviewed from Switzerland with the Canadian team in the same episode. And he talked about how it is so hard to get good players in the NHL. You can never let them go once you have them. That teams weren't letting their good players go, and you can never let your good players go. And I thought, what a fucking terrible attitude for a GM to have. He seems like a lovely guy, but honestly, that's exactly how the Leafs got into this mess. How about this? Find players who are undervalued and bring them into your organization. It's not about, like, keeping what's already been proven. If you look at Carolina, if you look at Colorado, if you look at Montreal, they went out and found players. And they were, like, how many times have you heard this phrase, diamond in the rough? What you got with Treliving was, get all the diamonds you can and then put your arms around them and don't let Gollum at them. As opposed to, like, the other teams who are actually smart and good, who say, more players are good than you think. Let's find some of those. So it's an interesting thing, just to go back to Vegas, to see, like, we always talk about the players. But honestly, success comes from the top down.
I also appreciated that, I forget which Montreal executive you know, gave a shout out. I think it was Hughes, gave a shout out to Mark Bergevin saying,
did he?
Yeah, gave a shout out to Mark Bergevin. I was like, well, he signed Suzuki, traded for Suzuki, and like looked at some of the major moves that happened under his watch and said, yeah, we did have some very big assets here, and he was a part of that.
If the Leafs were running the Sabres, they would be like, give Alex Tuch no matter what he asks, because he's good and we can't afford to let him go. As opposed to thinking, if it gets past a certain point, let him go, but then we can use that money to maybe bring in a goalie.
Yep.
Which after that series suggests we probably need a goalie more than anything else. But the Leafs, and particularly the management over the last 5 years, have been so fearful, and even really under Shanny, like people have been begging for change, and they're like, no, you can never let good players go. You'll never get the same return for it. Well, maybe not one for one, but the idea is you just keep bringing in people who have the potential to be better than people think, and eventually you build a winner.
I wonder how many Leaf fans, when no one's looking, goes on the... you know, goes and looks at the Montreal Canadiens salary cap and all the players under
contract. What, the fact they have like 8 players for the same prices as the core 4?
Yeah, same, far less.
None like 8 good players?
None of them in the 10. Like, what, you got Lane Hutson for how many years? For how much? You know, I just wonder how many they just look at that. And
that is a tough one.
That is it's a tough one. I wonder it's rage bait for Leaf fans when you go look at the contracts and stuff in Montreal.
It really is. How long do we have?
We got about 13 minutes.
Okay, we got a little bit of time. Hey, I got a question for you. Are people obsessing over the draft yet?
No, because we know it's Gavin McKenna. It feels like...
Do we know that?
It feels like pretty much a done deal. If it's not Gavin McKenna, then it feels like then maybe they try to trade down and go get one of the defensemen. Until we start hearing anything, then it pretty much just feels like everyone is just pouring over Gavin McKenna highlights and being happy when Craig Buttons has him at number one. It kind of feels like that's where we are.
And are people responding to some of the reports? I think it's Chris Johnson who's reporting this, that everybody on the team is available except for Austin Matthews.
That got some attention because it's basically just, oh, would they look to move William Nylander? And which would be... everything just goes back to, is it a rebuild? Is it a retool? You can't do a rebuild because you don't have 2 first-round picks, so you might as well try to retool. So if you trade William Nylander, holy shit, you would have to get back so many other pieces. It's getting some attention, but it's funny. It does feel... I think everyone is just a little Leaf fatigued out.
Mm-hmm.
It went from the whole year, everything is shit, everything is shit, everything is shit. Wait a minute. What did Keith Pelly say? Oh, it's worse. Everyone got fired. Hooray, we got the number one pick. We're happy. And then can we just have a break? Like, I'm not feeling... Like, you can sort of sense when the radio shows are trying to have the Leafs conversation and they'll throw out the Leafs question to the Leafs guest and the answer is, you know, I'm not sure. And then they try to give an answer. Everything kind of feels like we're in pause right now.
Do you know what's proof of this? If Mitch Marner had been doing this well in the playoffs and the press conference was happening at the same time, the reaction to Mitch would be much more dramatic. And I think people are trying to make that topic happen because they're used to Leafs fans just being outraged about everything. But most people look at him and go, Mitch Marner's usome.
Oh, good callback.
Thank you.
Right now.
Thank you.
Good job. He is usome. And the funny thing is, I feel most of the people that try to do the, see, Marner was better than you thought, that's everyone trying to get Toronto Maple Leaf adjacent clickbait. Make it about the Maple Leafs and you know you're going to get more attention. And then when I hear people go, oh, well, the media, they were wrong. When I hear that, I'm like, people aren't pro Marner. They're anti-media. They don't like the media, so they're trying to create stories that aren't true.
I read one today, a headline talking about clickbait. This was a good one. And it worked because I clicked. The conspiracy that threatens to tear the Leafs apart. And the idea was, why is it always Chris Johnston and Elliot Friedman who are leaking stories about what Austin Matthews is up to?
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible his camp is just leaking information to them so that they report it so that they can swing the negotiation between them and the team in their favor?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I thought, wait a minute. You mean like what happens every single day of every year in every sport with every team, that agents and the media and there's like this dance that goes on and who's leaking what? But when you frame it as the conspiracy that threatens to tear the Leafs apart...
And how does that relate to the bust size of Sidney Sweeney? I'm trying to think of things that everyone seems to yammer about.
She does come up a lot, doesn't she? There's always somebody who's like the object of affection, but then like
everyone gets angry, or not even angry. There's always a lot of tension, and I'm so glad I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, I don't give a fuck. She's wearing jeans. She's not wearing jeans. She's on this show. She can't act on this. She's doing this. I don't care. Well, I'm moving on with my
day. You know what this is? This is the naked at the gym phase of life. You know how like there's the old guys and they don't care if they walk around without pants on?
Right.
We're entering that phase where you just don't care anymore.
Except for if I am at a gym, the towel will not be around my shoulder when my dick and balls are hanging out. Okay?
So if you have a towel, you'll use it.
I will use it around the waist the way God intended. Not as a shoulder splash guard when I'm brushing my teeth. Oh, that is not where the towel will be.
Oh, that's awesome.
Colbert?
Yeah, let's do it, okay? Top line thoughts for you. Last show tonight.
I loved Colbert. Like, to me, one of the golden ages of comedy was on Comedy Network, early 2000s, for maybe about 8-9 years, when it was the Jon Stewart, the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, and then he would hand off to Colbert, and brilliant. And those shows were different. I mean, obviously, they had some, you know, the ethos and the writers were probably similar, but that was such a funny hour. And Colbert was so good when he was a correspondent in the Daily Show. And Colbert showed he could carry his own show. And both of those were great. I didn't watch as much on his when he did his show. I always loved his clips on religion, on faith, on processing death and finding joy in misery. Like, I love Colbert, and I can't wait to see what he does next. But my favorite version of Colbert was when Jon Stewart would hand it off to Colbert when they would do that little talk back between each other.
The crossover.
Crossover, thank you.
I think that he was revolutionary in a very specific way, and I'm going to explain what I mean by this. By going back to David Letterman. David Letterman was revolutionary because he took the Tonight Show format and he made it new. He made it really, he was like REM when REM was like this huge indie band. Mm-hmm. It was made for college kids. Like at the same time that college rock was becoming a thing, David Letterman was becoming a thing on campuses. And it was ironic and it was steeped in the traditions of stuff, but it also had a kind of a quotation marks around its spin on things. You know, dropping watermelons and, you know, stupid human tricks and like, a bit like Adam Sandler would do, where he wasn't just doing sketches, he was doing sketches about doing sketches.
Yeah.
So Opperman's a silly character because characters are silly. You know, it was all just very self-conscious. And that really carried us through about 20 years of late night, where it was all just, you know. And then Leno felt like so old-fashioned in comparison because he was still kind of more like the real Carson bit. We got so steeped in Kimmel and Fallon and all these guys, and they're all the inheritors of Letterman. What I find interesting about Colbert is he was revolutionary because he went back to the 60s. But he didn't do it just in terms of the format. He did it in terms of the smart. Because the 60s and late night was smart. Jack Parr, David Frost, where you could have a conversation about things that made you actually think.
At a time, by the way, of existential conversations about Vietnam, communism, the draft, other countries getting nuclear weapons. We talk about how this is the most important election or these are the most important times. And I'm not discounting it because it's true. But I think sometimes we forget the fear of Nixon and, you know, four dead in Ohio.
Right. It's such a great point, Matt. And I was thinking how it's obviously free speech pushback against CBS. And, you know, there's a cost-cutting factor to it, I'm sure. But trust me, I don't believe they were in any hurry to save his career as opposed to proving to the political nabobs that, you know, they would do their bidding for them.
Well, bend the knee to the orange turd.
Beautifully said. But in the late 60s, the Smothers Brothers got canceled because they pushed too many buttons. When you're in a moment where you push buttons, there's always the danger that you could be canceled because you're costing people money. I feel like what Colbert did was he became like Cronkite was, there was like a calm intelligence to his genius where not only were you entertained and laughing, but you walked away going, I think I'm a little smarter now. And Jon Stewart had that, but it was very self-conscious. I think with Colbert, what he settled into is exactly what you're talking about, which is the conversations about religion and art and his interview. Like, Letterman never gave a shit about his interviews. Not one bit. Wacky stuff would happen, but David Letterman wasn't an interviewer. He was looking for bits. He was looking for seams to get into. Colbert actually interviewed people.
I always enjoyed, there was one where he went back and forth with Ricky Gervais about religion.
Yeah.
And I just enjoyed that one. I've never been to church, but I enjoy it. I also like the fact.
You've never been to church?
I've been for, maybe for one service. Weddings and funerals, that's it.
Really?
Yeah, never been to church. But what I liked about Colbert, I liked the left-wing fella who also was Christian and was not afraid to admit it and would talk about the positives. I think too often, and the left and right, they have their things. And on the left, it's usually going to be just crapping on religion. And not like religion doesn't have to be crapped on, but it gets to be predictable. Oh, look, Stephen King, another one of his books where, what's it really about? The evils of religion. It's like, that's a little predictable. It's one thing I liked about Colbert. He had a lot of the stereotypes, but at the same point, if you wanted to have a conversation about faith, he was there for it. And I don't know why that one always stuck out for me.
I think what it did, well, it stuck out for exactly the reason you said, which was everything else felt ironic and like it was making fun of stuff. And, you know, Kimmel, I think, straddles a line because he can be quite sincere as well. Mm-hmm. But nobody was quite as sincere as Colbert. You always felt like his show was a platform for the values he held. I think that's true of Kimmel, too. And I think Kimmel has really evolved into that. But and both those men are pretty amazing. I don't want to set one against the other.
No.
But Colbert is more of a, I don't know, he's just more old-fashioned. Like, his values are a little more conventional and a little more traditional. And to your point, to see somebody who's so clever and critical and incisive to also be very grounded, mm-hmm. that's a pretty amazing thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Like,
and funny as fuck.
Funny as fuck. My mid to late 20s when Daily Show and Colbert was a thing, I consumed it every day. I remember, I think it was when John Kerry lost to Bush. I'm trying to remember. God, my brain is going. And we had a big party, and there was like the Daily Show was doing presidential election coverage for the night, and we were all watching it. Like, I love that stuff. And it's going to be odd not having him, just not having our lives. But then the curious thing is, what will the next chapter be?
Well, I was going to say to you, have you heard the rumors? I don't know if he said it himself. I mean, he's talked about this project. I don't know if he's really going to do it, but he's working on the next Lord of the Rings movie.
That makes sense. He is also a complete nerd.
Yeah.
Like a total nerd.
And he apparently approached Peter Jackson. I watched a clip about this and found a passage that he thought actually could be extrapolated and a movie made about it. I thought that was really interesting. And God, that would be really good. You know, Lord of the Rings and Colbert are kind of the same in that they're both Christian and both traditional, but also wildly entertaining.
Bob, that would be really awesome.
Thanks for listening to the Macko and Cause podcast. Remember to subscribe on iTunes or Audioboom. And if you like the podcast, leave a review. If you don't like the podcast, then maybe don't leave a review.